Hello and welcome to the People to People podcast.
I'm Hazel and I'm from Scotland.
I'm Chimsy and I'm from Malawi.
And on this podcast, we explore partnerships between Scotland and Malawi. We're interested in what's working and what is being learned. This is your opportunity to check out what other partnerships are doing and where they're at. Professor Tracy Morse and Dr. Effie Chipeta join us for a conversation in this episode to talk about partnership projects which look at the mental health and the well-being in young adults in Malawi.
They've also both worked in sexual and reproductive health, so we touch on that.
You can hear from the start that this is a really special partnership rooted in people-to-people connection and mutual learning. Actually, adding on that, there was one part that I think it's a glimpse into the partnership and the relationship that they both have when she talks about, I'm paraphrasing here, they also share butter beans for butternut squash.
So they also swap food, yeah.
Yeah, and I thought that was really beautiful that the partnership is on a, you know, starts with the littlest things and then also they're able to share partnership in this huge, big project that looks at two different countries.
It's people to people, isn't it?
Yeah. It is. No, yeah, I thought that. Yeah, I was like, oh, that's very beautiful.
And they clearly just have lots of respect for each other, listen to each other and get on with each other. Well, welcome to the podcast. It's really great to have you on. Do you want to just start by introducing yourself and what the project is that we're going to talk about today?
Hi, Hazel and Chimsy. I am Tracy Morse. I'm a professor of environmental health here at the University of Strathclyde, and I also run the university's Centre for Sustainable Development. Having been based in Malawi for 20 years, it's obviously a very, very, very important place in my heart in terms of research and development and areas that I've worked in as well.
Hi, I'm Effie Chipeta. I'm a social scientist, but I also have a background in health as a nurse and midwife. I work with Kamuzu University of Health Sciences. I'm a principal investigator for the Adolescent Health and Wellbeing Study.
So how did you two meet? Tell me about that.
So when I was based out in Malawi, we were doing some work around menstrual hygiene management for girls, actually, at the time with a colleague of ours, Christabel Kambala, from Malawi University of Business and Applied Sciences. And we were looking at who we thought would have great insights and approaches and things to help us with that. And of course, who else could we approach but Effie to work with us in that area? And then that kind of expanded on, didn't it, Effie, to working around some sexual reproductive health rights?
I think meeting Tracy has been a journey. I kept on hearing about the presence of Tracy in Malawi and that she has been in Malawi for quite a long time. But then when Tracy came on board, we realized that, oh, she had this kind of rare skill. And we really looked forward to opportunity where we could collaborate with her. And Tracy has been a wonderful member of our team.
Can I just say very importantly as well that Effie and I swap chimanga for butternut squash when I lived in Malawi. And that was in a very integral part of our relationship as well.
So basically, I've also known Tracy as a farmer.
Yeah.
That one we have to give credit to the husband for there, I think, for my side, Effie, not me.
You've made your trades. That's brilliant. So tell me about the project then.
Okay. Our project is focusing on adolescent health and well-being. We are basically looking at different areas of work, bringing together different expertise in education, economics, environmental health, in the area of WASH, water and sanitation, adolescent health, even adolescent health and well-being.
I think importantly to say, this came from Will Stones and Effie. You know, they were part of a large global early adolescent study. And from that work in Malawi, they really identified, you know, alongside their other, you know, long-term work in sexual reproductive health, identified other areas that were impacting adolescents. And we're kind of really conscious that adolescents are often quite a neglected component of the healthcare system. I think if this statistic is still correct, nearly half Malawians are 19 or under. So it's a huge proportion of the population in the country. And one which often, you know, we really focus on under fives, and then we kind of jump in again at maternal health. And there's this whole period where we know from other work across the world are absolutely integral to future well-being. And we don't really have a clear understanding of what that looks like in Malawi and similar countries at the moment. And things like well-being for adolescents, we don't even have criteria for that in the UK, right? So, you know, we tend to take adult well-being criteria and apply it to adolescents everywhere. And it's very different for a young person. You know, we can all remember the trauma of being an adolescent at some point as well, and how challenging that can be. So here at Strathclyde, we have like the Institute for Inspiring Children's Futures. We have really strong social care, social policy team that look at participatory approaches with adolescents. So we wanted to help use the expertise at Strathclyde to kind of plug the gaps and help build capacity in Malawi for those areas that the expertise weren't already there. And where the expertise are there, absolutely use them to help us understand the context, what we need to leverage, how we can implement these things in a context appropriate way.
So we are going to use different research methodologies, blended research methodologies. So we call them like mixed methods. Yeah, we have a longitudinal survey, which is part of the formative. So there are several questions that we're asking out there to the adolescents recruited within schools. Yeah, and through the survey is going to help us to learn more about different issues. For example, us is going to give us information about the extent of ACEs in the adolescent population.
Adverse childhood experiences.
Mm-hmm. But then complementing the survey, we also want to get the lived experiences from the individual's perspective of what it means to experience the ACEs. So we'll be doing interviews, and some will be moved into focus group discussions like parents. The issue like ACEs would not only affect an adolescent. So the adolescent is part of a household. So some of the ACEs would be occurring at household level. The adolescent is part of the PA groups, PA networks. So some of these are occurring within interrelationships at PA level. And this could happen within the community or in schools. And some, the adolescents also live within a wider community. So there are issues at the community level that we also have an interest. We are interviewing other key stakeholders like religious leaders, traditional leaders, peer groups, all this so that we can bring about a story about what it means for the adolescents experiencing ACEs and how does that impact on their sexual reproductive health and rights outcomes, but also mental health outcomes. There's a lot of poverty around, and sometimes adolescents are used as a source of income, where mothers would send the adolescents to go and engage in income generating activities whilst missing out on school. Yeah, we also want to train the adolescents to capture some of the images using the photo voice. So like Strathclyde have expertise in photo voice. So they are coming to train and build our capacities so that we can also engage in different and these innovative research methodologies like use of photo voice. So we want our adolescents to describe what adverse childhood experiences mean within a specific community where they live. And that is going to be captured through images. So they are going to be trained how to use a camera, and they would capture anything that to them has a meaning of adverse childhood experiences. We'll be taking them through the processes of interpreting and also putting them into a graphic format.
And just like for somebody who doesn't speak that language, that could mean something like an experiencing poverty or experiencing abuse of some kind, or...
Yes, it could be violence, abuse, whether physical abuse or sexual abuse. Yeah, it could be parental neglect. It could mean anything that has had negative impact on them. Yeah.
Loss, bereavement as well, those sorts of things. Yes. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I see you taking notes.
No, it's okay. So earlier you touched upon context appropriate, which I thought was really important and really necessary, I guess, when you're talking of sexual reproductive health and mental well-being in Malawi. And then you spoke of issues of mental health in Malawi are silent,
I would like to know why you think that is the case, and are the studies that, or the environment you work in, trying to find ways of how the community can move from where they are now to where you mm-hmm. would like to be?
Yeah, it's complex, but all I can say is that even when you look for statistics around mental health for Malawi, you find that there are no statistics at all. Yeah, we know that adolescents suffer depression. There are a few studies around that. And people that have done studies in Malawi show that about maybe 20% of adolescents would be experiencing depression. Yeah, but there are also studies that are showing that from the youth-friendly health services, there are no youth-friendly mental health services. So adolescents could be experiencing symptoms around their mental health, but there's nowhere, it's not linked to access, but also general acceptability around the community to think about depression as a health problem. I think that's also a challenge. People in Malawi don't accept that depression or anxiety or whatever is a problem. You know, they have other problems that they worry about. They would worry about hunger. Yeah, they would worry about major, big other things.
And I think that's partly, Chinzi, what we, the kind of methodologies we're using here. You know, Effie's described, you know, the use of photo voice. There's also going to be arts based, you know, where our WASH team have been having, you know, kids in schools draw their experience, for example, around using school toilets or what challenges they face around coming to school. It's been really interesting what comes up through some of those images and things that the kids explain. And I think that's part of this kind of formative phase, is helping find the right avenues for young people. And as Effie said, those people in their kind of ecosystem to describe how they feel about those challenges, how they feel about the experience they have, the support they have, the social capital, the kind of trust and networks they have to support them within that as well. Part of the program that we have, we've been incredibly lucky with our funder that we have 6 PhDs that are being funded through the program and support from Strathclyde. And all of those are Malawians. On one side, we're helping build capacity through the program in Malawians who can tackle these areas. One of our PhD students and with our social care, social policy team is going to be using participatory and arts-based approaches with adolescents to explore what well-being means to them. And government, who sit on our steering group, are excited to see what comes out of that, because they want a framework to say this is what well-being is for adolescents in Malawi as well. I'm not saying that we promise we're going to have all the answers to that by the end of a piece of research, but we'll help contribute towards the development of that as well. But equally, I think just hearing those voices and hearing the way in which anxiety, depression, mental well-being are approached and articulated by young people helps us to then think about how do we approach this in the future. Effie mentioned the youth-friendly health services. And when we worked together on the Solgololanga project, that was something we were really keen to look at, because often youth-friendly health services are in the same clinic as everyone else is in. They're run by somebody's auntie or whatever who lives in the same village or close by. There's very little confidentiality or the feeling of confidentiality about going in. It's very much targeted towards sexual reproductive health. But actually, there's lots of other reasons an adolescent wants to go to a health clinic. You know, so by going to youth-friendly health services, there's the danger of inferring that you're sexually active when you might not be. You might just have migraines all the time or other health issues that you want someone to see. So I think hearing that voice of adolescents within this program will hopefully help us to provide evidence and advice on how some of those things can maybe be changed in a way that is appropriate for Malawi's context and cost effective. Maybe just lastly, another of our PhD students is working on the issue of intergenerational discussion as well. So how do we help adolescents' voices be heard in the space of policymakers and people who are often very dismissive? I worked on a project years ago and we tried to build village advisory groups, which included adolescents, and they felt you know, very excluded from community decisions. I think one of the quotes we always used was, you know, the boys were like, we're only called on when we need to dig a grave. We need to empower them to feel that they have agency and they can have a voice at different levels, whether that's in their community or higher. But equally, we need to work with policymakers and civil servants and politicians to be willing to sit down and listen to the voice of adolescents. You know, if 50% of your population is made up of people in 19 and under, you need to be listening to those people that are 19 and under about what it is they want for the future. We do have an urban-based study site in Blantyre and a rural-based study site up in Imchinji as well. And I think those are going to be interesting comparisons for us. So when we look at Imchinji, where we're doing the rural area, it's still a significant tobacco growing area as well. So there is exposure to tobacco for early adolescents and things too, and that kind of income. And that real balance between the need to make money and have household income, but then the potential health impacts of growing tobacco and being in contact with tobacco and things too. And it's not easy. Poverty is at such an extreme level in some of these areas. What can seem very black and white sitting in Scotland of, well, we shouldn't have children and young people near tobacco. We're not looking at parents who are looking to abuse their children here. We're looking at smallholder farmers who are looking for, you know, the family to all pitch in and help the household make a living.
That's interesting. So I just was wondering if there was like any challenges or difficulties in your partnership that you've been facing that other organizations might resonate with. It sounds like a really... like there's a real people-to-people connection between the two of you anyway. I can get that instantly as soon as you both came online together.
I think for me, one of the things that I think is both a strength and a struggle is the fact that, as Effie mentioned earlier, this is a very interdisciplinary programme. So, and really it's what we would call in academia a transdisciplinary programme. So it's not just about the academics being involved, but it's about the communities, the people themselves who are co-researchers. So the adolescents in this are not, you know, that horrible term of beneficiaries or whatever. They're our co-researchers. And that makes it very exciting, but also it makes it very challenging. We have to train. It takes time to get people up to speed. But also even within our own academic groups, you know, we have people who are environmental health, people who are sexual reproductive health, people who are health economists, health systems, well-being and social care, and everyone works in their own way. And what we're trying to do as much as possible is make sure that our colleagues come together to share methodologies, to share insights, so that we learn from one another through this process as well, and it really strengthens how we work. I often say to colleagues in Scotland that, again, it's something we could learn from Malawi. I think academics in Malawi are naturally interdisciplinary. I think in the UK, we've put ourselves in silos so much over the last few decades that it makes that approach quite challenging unless you actively go and look for it.
I also wanted to talk about recruitment. We are targeting adolescents, and most of the adolescents, for adolescents in schools, there are a lot of issues. The primary consideration for the ministry is for them to learn and to utilize the time they're in school for classes, for lessons. Yeah, so we need to work with the Ministry of Education to find spaces where we can also collect data from the adolescents to listen to their voices. At the same time, we're also working with adolescents that are out of school. Yeah, and adolescents out of school could mean anything. Sometimes they could be available, or sometimes it's a mobile population. Ethics is also another issue, because adolescents are a vulnerable group, and especially when we are looking at the very young adolescents. So getting an ethical approval and writing a proposal, a protocol that is really going to be considered appropriate, sometimes it also takes a bit of time.
Actually, that's a really good point, Effie. One way we tried to address that from the very offset of this project is we had face-to-face meeting, and much as Zoom and everything is marvelous these days, nothing beats just having a cup of tea and a chat and getting to know one another. And so back in 2022, I guess it was, Effie, in November, you know, some of the team came from Scotland to Malawi, some of them coming to Malawi for the first time, which was very exciting. But we spent that first few days together discussing, well, what are the principles by which we want to work, you know, around academic freedom, academic sharing, of outputs, but also those issues of trust in one another, transparency and things as well. So we've developed a code of conduct, which has taken us a substantial period of time, which covers all these issues of how we work together, how we publish our outputs, whether that's a podcast or a blog or a peer-reviewed publication, how we tackle issues of safeguarding and making sure that we're on board from both a UK perspective and a Malawi perspective and things too. So that's taken some time to put together, but I think it's been a really worthwhile process to engage with everyone and hear all of the researchers' voices in that as well. And I think really important to both Effie and I is protecting our early career researchers, making sure they get the opportunity to be first authors on papers. They're the heavy lifters. They're the driving force behind the work that actually gets done. We really want to make sure that they get recognition for what they do. And also our co-researchers, our adolescents and our other stakeholders also get recognition. It's the equitable side of things as well.
Especially on the sexual reproductive health part, my interest would be like the community's attitude, because in Mzuzu we have Banjala Nsogolo. Growing up, you wouldn't say Banjala Nsogolo and someone would be like, oh, great thing you're going there.
So is this like a clinic, Chimzi, or something?
Yeah. So I wonder if people's attitudes have changed. Are people more open to talking about sexual reproductive health in Malawi? Because we did, so in season one, we spoke of teenage pregnancies, especially during COVID and how the number had gone up during that time. So are people open to having the discussion about sexual health? Because as a child, my mother never spoke to me about sexual health, ever. Nor did my aunts. It was just like, bas. Hey, so that means don't play with boys. But you know, and nothing else. So have people's attitudes changed?
Changing attitudes, it has taken time. I can say that I think mostly people still hold negative attitudes towards especially access to sexual reproductive health services. I think there are a lot of fears. One, providers' negative attitudes. Yeah, they are faced with providers that are almost like their moms, but also in community attitudes. So it's not easy for the adolescents to walk into a facility and there she's automatically identified that she went for this particular service, and especially where services are not integrated, where services are given in silo. So we have facilities where the services are actually saying, okay, this is family planning service, this is ART, this is HIV testing. Because an adolescent cannot be free to walk in any of that service without being stigmatized. Before they even reach home, where it has already reached home that, oh, we saw your daughter, yeah, walking into a family planning clinic. You see, adolescent fertility rate for Malawi remains very high. And that's why even in our project, we want to look at, understand what well-being means for the adolescent. What does it mean? Because the country is offering youth-friendly services, but adolescents are not accessing them, you know?
Is contraception free in Malawi?
Mm-hmm, it is. It is in all facilities. Even in Catholic faith-based facilities, contraceptive use is an essential high-impact intervention which is being supported by government.
But I think also fair to say, isn't it, Effie, that there are very clear parameters around which contraceptives are for who. You know, from a cultural perspective, you know, condoms and things for young people, you know, once you've had a child, you can then move into your more long-term injections, that kind of thing.
Yeah, actually what you said, Tracy, contraception is appropriate for women of childbearing age that have proven their fertility and they have a complete family, five or more children. Without having a child, a woman is not recognized at all. So these are the things, you know. You can be allowed to use contraception even by the husband, by the community, when you have five children or more.
Wow, five children. I have two children and it's a lot. A lot of children.
Yeah. I will give you three more.
I think if you listen carefully, it's all context dependent, which I think is a really important thing, especially looking at mental health and well-being, not just this topic, but I think overall the relationship between Scotland and Malawi. One of the examples she gives is for the young adults who live close or in the region where a lot of tobacco is grown. It's like looking at the context from this country, it's like, oh, why are the children not able to go to school, or they're surrounded by tobacco, which is not good for them. Whereas you flip that context, you put it in a different context, in a Malawian context, where it's like, actually, because of the region that we grew up in, and because there's a lot of tobacco, we are able to work. Therefore, this provides for their education and also for the family. Many thanks to Professor Tracy Morse and Dr. Effie Chipeta for joining us in this episode. This podcast is produced independently and is supported by the Scotland-Malawi Partnership, for which we are very grateful.